What's happening, everybody? You're now tuning into the Producer's Corner with Spud Too Tight, and I have a very special show for you today. On the phone with me, I have a very talented and gifted vocalist. She has earned a very respectable career as a solo artist and has performed and recorded with some of the biggest names in the business, such as Patti LaBelle, Mary J. Blige, and Celine Dion. In addition to that, she has also appeared on the big screen in Tyler Perry's hit movie, Diary of a Mad Black Woman. Please put your hands together and welcome vocalist, performer, and actress, Cheryl Pepsi Riley. How's it going, Cheryl?
Hey. Not bad. How you doing?
Oh, I'm doing great. Doing great, man. It's just truly an honor, you know, have the opportunity to talk to you. You're just an amazing vocalist, and I've heard a lot of your music in the past and some of the current stuff that I recently heard, and it's just off the meters. I can't say enough about it.
Well, thank you. I appreciate that. I appreciate it.
You know, the first time I had a chance to listen to your music, it's from the track from back in the day, Thanks for My Child, and that's a pretty popular song within the urban communities and, you know, on the gospel side and things, and I remember even the video, you know, associated with, so it's just like, wow, man, she could just really sing, and, you know, this, you haven't changed a bit, your vocals are still there, and everything is just tight, so...
Oh, no, I appreciate that. That was, wow, that was back in 1988.
Yes, yes. You know, that was a cool, that was the time for me when I actually started tracking recording. I was only 14
really?
At the time, but, you know, I was just, you know, into music at a very young age, and, you know, production was everything to me growing up and, you know, listening to great vocalists, and you were on the mark at that time, so.
Oh, wow. I thank you so much. And, hey, here's a little trivia for you. That video, which was my first video, and it was also my first time in Los Angeles, was directed by Forrest Whitaker, which was his first venture into any type of direction.
Wow. Now, that I didn't know.
I know many don't. That's a wonderful thing, a little tidbit for your show.
Yeah, wow. Forrest Whitaker, well, he's a talent in himself, man. But, you know, just to, you know, to hit the music side, that's, man, that's amazing.
Yes, yes, yes.
Now, how did that particular song come together? I know a couple of the Full Force members have written and produced that song for you.
Yeah. I actually, I was working with Full Force. At that point, they were managing and producing Lisa Lisa and Cult Jam and UTFO and themselves as well. And I'd known Bowlegged Lou for a while. We all knew each other, actually, from Brooklyn. We were all born and raised in Brooklyn, New York. And I was a part of a local group here, as were they, were Full Force, a local group. And Lou and I actually met doing community theater. And I got an opportunity, actually, to work with them prior to Thanks for My Child, which, you know, some people enjoy this story, but I was in this group, and I am very loyal, sometimes loyal to a fault, they say. But I was a part of this group, and Lou called me and played this song on the phone, said, you know, we'd really love for you to record this song. And at the time, I didn't want to venture off from the group. I just thought it wouldn't be right or fair. And a year later, that song came out. Lou called me, and it was playing on the radio here in New York, and he said, okay, you hear that? See, you blew it. You blew it. And that song was I Wonder If I Take You Home, Lisa Lisa and Cult Jam's first hit.
Yeah.
And what's ironic about that is by that time, and within that year, the group that I was holding on to and being loyal to had disbanded. So, of course, you know, you are in youth, you think, okay, oh, wow, that was my one shot. But I realized, you know, hindsight is 20/20, and I know that I was not supposed to be Cheryl and Cult Jam, that I was supposed to be known for a different type of music, because the music that I'm known for, like a Thanks to My Child and How Can You Hurt the One You Love, and just, you know, the type of things that I like to write and express, those are closer to who I am as a person. And so, you know, everything for a reason. And, you know, we got a chance to work together. You know, they took another shot, and we actually recorded the project before we even got a deal. We just, you know, were working on it and just planning to shop it. And here we are, you know, years later, and there's this wonderful career that I am really thankful for and grateful for, because I've been able to stay relative and stay in the scene, and it's a wonderful thing. It's a blessing.
It is. You know, it's funny you mentioned the comfortability of your style and identifying yourself as a musician. You know, I talk a lot about on my show, working at 100% of your fullest potential on a project. It's nice to tap into different styles and things, but you know, when it comes to actually doing work and just being on an album, I feel that everybody should kind of know their strengths and weaknesses and just really focus on the strengths. If that's not a project that you're going to shine on, I'd rather not do it.
Right. No, that's true. You're right. It's got to be something you can live with at the end of the day, and we make choices that follow us throughout our lives. So, I'm a mommy and an aunt and a daughter and a wife. And so you want to make sure that your material, that you can keep your head up and say, yep, I did this and I'm really proud of this and keep moving from there.
Right. Now, Cheryl, I got to ask you, you have such a diverse background as an artist. Because you're an actress and a vocalist, so you're on that artist level at this point. Who were some of your musical influences as a vocalist and also as an actress?
Well, as a vocalist, I'm blessed to have come up in an era where I could listen to a Patti LaBelle or Chaka Khan or Nancy Wilson or Gladys Knight or Stevie Wonder or Donny Hathaway or Phyllis Hyman. All these wonderful artists who had their own styles, but they were all successful in their own right. It's the thing that became a concern along the way where, the music industry started kind of doing the cookie cutter thing and wanted everybody to sound the same, which, sure. After a while it's a bit boring. And there's no, real creativity in that. So I grew up listening to all those artists as well as, gospel artists, because my family, my entire family sings, my mom and my dad, my aunts and uncles, everybody. I was raised in church everybody in my family sang gospel. So, that's where my roots are. So definitely, Shirley Caesar, one of my favorite gospel albums actually is Aretha Franklin, Amazing Grace, way back when. So I listened to all that. But then there's a whole other type of music. I love jazz. I love rock as well. I love all types of music. So those are the things. Back in that time, you had all these different types of artists. So that when you're developing your own style and you're finding who you are, I always say that I'm a gumbo of all my influences. And then in the acting side, of course, we didn't have a lot of our faces back then, but we had Diane Carroll and Cicely Tyson and Ruby Dee and Ozzie Davis and Sidney Poitier. And those, those are the folks that I came up looking at and watching and just, wanted so much to be able to tell a story like they told a story. You know what I mean?
Right.
And so it's I'm still doing that. I'm still looking for all the opportunities to express in that way because those are my passions in life.
Right. I want to back up a little bit, talk about the church background. I'm also a church boy. I've been playing for my church for about 17 years as a keyboardist and music director. And, coming in at such a young age, at about 16 is when I started playing. And, having that foundation through the church has really groomed me as a musician and other avenues of music and different genres and styles. For one, it was like my first audience that was able to perform in front of. Just having that live experience of playing, I was able to take those attributes and bring it to the studio and really take my compositions to another level. And, I talk a lot of guys like, man, you really want to get your skills together and really develop that ear for picking up covers and improv is at the church, man.
Well, the musicianship in the church is different than some of, the other musicians that have come up in another forum because, especially back in the day, I grew up Baptist. My father's a preacher as well. And, the organist or the whatever key sister, whoever was singing in, yeah, and find it right away and pick it up and go with it. And that's a everybody doesn't have that.
Right.
You know what I mean? That's a skill. That is a, it's a gift, actually. Everybody can't do that, and it's very rare, but you'll find musicians who have that ear as well as have the technical side of it, who can read music and write charts and, you know, do all that. But that's, I always encourage musicians and singers as well, you know, and try to better myself even with just honing your craft and learning about what it is you do. Because if you can get a nice balance of that, you can work anywhere and with anyone.
Oh, totally. Especially on the theory side of music. You know what I mean? The possibilities are endless. And, you know, I always tell a lot of other keyboardists, it's like, man, you know, to be able to conversate about theory is one thing, but let's take it and make it to the application of our playing that we're talking about. That's really where it's going to take our skills to another level, you know, is to make
that
theory.
Well, you know what? And the other part of that is that there is a feel and a soulful thing that comes from the church background that everybody can't do. They can't translate off a chart and reading.
Right.
You know what I mean?
Right.
Like, that's a whole other, that's a whole other thing.
Yeah.
That feel, and because, I believe that music is healing, and it is to encourage and motivate and inspire, and it can take anybody, even like someone who was just not musically inclined, it can take them on such a journey just being able to play from your core, from your heart. Everybody can't do that either.
Right. Yeah, that can't be taught. That's an experience, a life experience, and maturity.
Yes, it is. That's not in a book anywhere. You can't learn that out of a book.
Exactly. No, I agree with you. Now, Cheryl, you have a lot of hours and experience of recording in the studio. And one thing I'm going to ask you, as a vocalist, harmonies. And, you know, what's the format that you particularly use, or a recording technique that you apply in your recordings for stacking your vocals and getting everything on pitch and adding the glossy dynamics to the attacks of your vocal deliverance?
Well, I am one who absolutely loves harmony. Like, I've done a lot of background gigs. There are people who've been like, why are you doing the background? Well, because it's all music. And also because I love harmony. I believe, like, you know, it kind of sets the tone for a song. It's the cushion for the lead vocalist or whatever. So whenever I get to go in and record my own stuff, at first I usually do all my backs because I just love the process. Every once in a while I have to reel myself in, because I'll just have like a gabillion notes going on in the chord,
right,
that goes into the real abstract thing. And be like, ooh, was that deep? Did you feel that? You know?
Right. Capture the good moments.
Right. Sometimes those things are not as commercial as people would like. And that's another thing that when I'm in the studio, I want to keep the creative process. And of course you want it to still be something that your person who is not musically inclined can relate to, but you gotta put those special things in there. I'm good for stacking like at least four tracks of about five or six notes. Like, that's, I love stuff like that.
Sure.
But coming back, you know, and that's the way we used to really, really do it back whenever I first started recording. Now, you know, technology, you can really get the same presence and not have to put all those tracks of vocals on.
Right.
But to find those pretty nuances, you know, like what you can do now with the technology and add that whisper track just to give it a feel depending on what type of song it is. You know, I cater the backgrounds to, and how I stack them to whatever the song is. If it's an up song, if it's a, you know, a funky thing, it's going to have a little twang on it. It's going to have, you know, something on it. If there's something real dissonant and a feel thing, and I really want the listener to pay attention to the lyric, then I may not put as many tracks of backing on there, because I want to kind of keep the space. Because there's music in the silence. There's,
yes,
music in the speakers. So, you know, and those are things that I learned along the way, just to be able to paint the picture in the studio with how much or how little background or harmonies you put in and where you put them and whether you just kind of have stuff in the hook or whether you have just a little bit of something to be the exclamation point on a lyric you really want the listener to pay attention to. So it depends. It depends on the song and what mood I'm trying to get the listener to go into with me.
Right. No, I got you. Now, how do you like to receive your songs from other producers and writers? I mean, do you like them as instrumentals, or do you like to receive them with a demo artist displaying on how the track should go?
I much rather receive them as instrumentals. I'm more of a lyricist. I play a little piano, and I used to play more. I don't do as much now because I'm surrounded by all these wonderful, great musicians who do it so much better than I. So
sure, yeah.
I kind of leave it to them. But I much rather get instrumental tracks. And for me, like this, the last project I did, Let Me Be Me, which I did totally independently, all the music was done by myself and a gentleman out of Houston, Texas named Luke Austin. He did all the music and I did all the lyrics and the vocals. And the tracks, most of the time, dictate what the song is. Like, certain chords put me in the mind of love or put me in the mind of something socially conscious, or put me in the mind of something really funky and up and party, and or put me in the mind of, you know, something really sensual. It's usually in the music that I find what the lyric is. And now I'm working on some other music right now and doing the process a little bit different in that I'm still getting instrumentals and stuff, but I'm also working with another young keyboardist here, just kind of coming up with certain things as he plays chords and kind of giving him direction on where I want to go with it. And we're going that route. So we're like really like building the song from the ground up, which has been a wonderful, wonderful process.
You know, as a producer, from a producer side of composing, I have to agree with you that receiving a good skeleton track, maybe 45-50% done, helps the vocalist, you know, or the songwriter build around it. And what I usually do is get everyone's pre-rough draft of the vocals. You have your hook, you got your bridge, the main ride of the song, and I love building the compositions around pre-existing vocals. And you know, by the time we hear back again, they're always once, oh man, I want to redo my vocals since the full song is there. But you know, it's the building process of it. It really makes the song complete. You know, nowadays you receive tracks and they're done, and yeah, it may not really fit for you as an artist, but you're just going with it and writing with it based off of your talent, because you can deliver that way. You know, but is it really going to be that perfect production or composition for that artist? You know, so I definitely agree with you.
Yeah, and it depends on, you know, If there's someone else producing the track, or, you know, some people are, well, most of us, because these are our babies, are very sensitive about our music and our songs or whatever. And so usually if I get a demo that's already, you know, already has the vocal and, you know, they've kind of directed where they want it to go, it is their experience or the vocalist's experience, but doesn't necessarily speak to what my experience is, and then I find it really difficult to go in and perpetrate the fraud, if you will. Like, I am at the point where I need for the music to come from a real place. I need the emotion. Because, you know, when I was talking about the people that I grew up listening to, like, I always use the example of Al Green. Al Green could bend a note a certain way, and you can absolutely feel what he was feeling at that moment.
Oh yeah,
and that's life. That's a life thing. That's not even a musical thing. That's, you know, we're talking about a day where the vocals weren't corrected by Pro Tools, but that's the classic stuff.
Yes,
because you can still listen to those songs 30 years from when they were recorded and still feel that same thing. For me, that's the kind of music that I want to do, and when I go in the studio, that's what I'm going for, that real core thing, that coming from that real place, because I feel like if I completely put myself in it and you get all of me out of it, then that is what will touch the listener. And then if I'm coming from a real place and it's a real situation, 9 out of 10, there's somebody else who's going through that very same thing or feeling that very same thing. And then it connects to the listener in that way. And that's the route I like to go.
Oh, no, I definitely agree with you. You know, like I said, it's timeless, because even with Al Green, it's 35 years old, but you put the record on, it still feels fresh and brand new to you. It still hits you the same way 35 years ago.
Absolutely, absolutely, yes.
You know, how difficult was it for you, Cheryl, you know, making that transition as a recording artist and then hitting the stage and doing the plays and, you know, appearing in the movies and things? I mean, like I said, you're an artist, and I believe, you know, an artist has other talents that we haven't tapped into, you know, so we're able to sometimes in some situations have that transition work smoothly, and sometimes it's, you know, maybe out of our comfort zone. You know, how was it for you making that transition to the acting side of entertainment?
Well, for me, it was really cool because I always wanted to be, you know, do the acting. When I was always involved in community theater and in school growing up, all the theatrical performances. I loved doing that stuff because actually I wanted to act and dance because I thought everybody knew how to sing. Because my whole family sang, so I was surrounded by singers. I thought, everybody knows how to do this. This is nothing special. I want to act and dance. And then, you know, you get older and get around some other folks, and you realize that everybody can't sing harmony, which was devastating to me initially. And I'm talking about people who sing lead and sing lead really great, but, like, could not do harmony. And I did not understand that at all. So I was always involved in theater and musical theater and that kind of thing. So the transition was a natural one for me because it's something, you know, and then of course I've been doing the musical theater, so I've been able to incorporate the singing along with the acting. And I want to do so much more. You know, I want to do television and film and looking into projects for that. I just believe as an artist, especially the way this business can be, you know, it's very seasonal. So you have to be able to put your eggs in a few baskets, and it's cool because you try different things. You see what you're good at, you see what you're not so good at, you see what you'd like to do more of, and what you can take or leave, you know, and that's how we grow, you know, and I'm still growing. I'm always going to continue to challenge myself and still grow in the arts because I just believe that at the end of the day, this gift that I've been blessed with is a part of what my purpose is here on earth. So for me, it's so much bigger than just the entertainment of it.
Sure.
Yeah, so yeah, it was a natural transition because I just believe, you know, it's all been divinely ordained.
Yeah, oh no, I totally agree with you. You know, that gift, it takes you a long way. You know, it's, you know, if you're blessed and you have that gift, man, I just feel like the possibilities are endless of what you can do. So I totally agree with you. You know, I got to ask though, Cheryl, how was it working with Tyler Perry? I mean, he's a true visionary when it comes to plays and film. And just having that experience alone, I mean, I got to ask you. I want to know.
No, it's wonderful. And see, I was doing plays back in the day when I first started doing plays. There were about 3 or 4 plays out, so they stayed out for years, actually, because there weren't as many as you know, started happening. And at the time I started doing them, only myself and David Peaston were the only secular artists doing these gospel plays. And so I worked with different writers and touring productions. And when I started working with Tyler, I've been really blessed to watch him grow, which has been inspirational and motivational for myself. Because when I first started working with him, he was doing the theaters, and then he was selling out the theaters. And usually the plays would stay like a week or 2 weeks in a city. He couldn't do that because there was such demand. And then he started selling out arenas. And then we started doing 1- and 2-nighters in arenas, like a rock tour. And, you know, our joke is, you know, I called him Elvis Presley because it's just, you know, like, okay, in this genre, he is Mr. Presley on that. And but I was blessed to be there to watch him when he got his first movie, when he did his first movie and the first television show. And so just to watch, and he works hard, just to watch him. I mean, we're talking about a man who was homeless at one point.
Right.
And has, you know, had his own challenges, but he just kept on. You know, he believed in what his vision was, and he just kept on. And to see him now, you know, we did some stuff on the lot a couple of years ago, and I just remember just standing there, looking at all the people in Atlanta that he had employed, and how huge and wonderful this movie studio lot was, and just, I'm so proud of him because, I mean, he's just really, he's worked hard. I've watched him, I've seen him, you know, work hard, and again, it is inspiration and motivation for those of us around him to continue to push and press. Because I believe that if you can visualize something to be in your life or what your passion is, that I just believe that God wouldn't make it where he wouldn't provide it for you. You just got to do the work, though. Everybody's not willing to do the work and make the sacrifices. And there are sacrifices. You know what I mean? And things, challenges. But it's just been an incredible journey. And being able to be alongside him and watch the process and the progress has been just an awesome experience.
No, I definitely agree with you. You know, well, like I say, it just makes sense. I mean, you're such a great vocalist, and to take those talents and do it on a stage play, I mean, who better to work with than Tyler Perry? I mean, it's just an excellent combination, so.
I appreciate that. Yeah, it's the best. It's the best.
So what's on the musical agenda for 2011, Cheryl?
Well, I am working on some new music, still pushing ahead as well. I want to do some film and television, as I stated earlier, and working on, I have my own label on paper, and as I continue to get some of the music and working on the distribution, hoping I would love to be able to afford someone else with the same passion the chance to live their dream. I do a musicians and singers jam every Monday night. We call them Black Velvet Mondays.
Yeah.
And it is a, there in New York, there are a lot of open mics, and everywhere, there are a lot of open mics, but not really many places for musicians to go and stretch and express and create. And on the New York scene, we've got like just these awesome musicians. And it's not just people who are born and raised here, but I always say if they're in the grind and the hustle in New York, then I call them a New York musician. If you can do it here, you can do it absolutely anywhere.
That's right.
And see, I'm a band baby. I always say the joke is I'm not like the chick singer in the front.
Right.
That's never been me. I'm like the band baby because I grew up in an era where, you know, it was about the self-contained bands and the real music, the musicianship, where, you know, we listen to records, if it was a bass, you heard, you, there was a bass
right.
player playing it.
Oh, yeah, Rolls Royce, you know what I mean? SOS band,
yes.
I mean, the list goes on, yeah.
That's right. And now we don't really have that many. Men Condition, I absolutely love, but they're like the last of a dying breed almost, you know.
Yeah.
So I wanted to do something geared more towards musicians, but it's, you know, we're coming up on our fourth year anniversary. We do it at a place called the Village Underground in New York. It's right across from the Blue Note. And we've been blessed to have people come from all over the world because there's a live stream that we do. And they come down and we kind of mix and match musicians and singers. And for me, it is my way of paying it forward as well. And I give a lot of information and talk a lot about the lessons that I've learned in this business because there were some things that I learned some the hard way because nobody really, really told me certain things. You know what I mean? So
sure.
You find out along the way, you know, and with this business or with anything, you know, either it'll make or break you, you know, to show you what you're made of and make you decide, okay, is this really what I want to do? Because you don't do this if you want to just be rich.
Oh,
not
totally.
This is not that. You got to really do it because you have a passion for it and because of your musical integrity and that you really love it for the music. And so, this is, we have young folks, and it's not just babies, but just, you know, anybody with a dream that wants to do this business, just wants to be in the music business, it is, you know, I just kind of give little nuggets of information as I've learned them, and really they can be applied just to life, because I believe that how you do one thing, how you approach one thing in life is usually how you approach everything else. So just giving them, you know, certain set skills and information and, you know, about upping their repertoire and being able to, you know, just how you carry yourself. And it's really wonderful. Our mantra, we say, trust your gift. Trust your gift. And the whole thing behind that is you know, a lot of the young babies want to sound like Beyonce, who is absolutely fantabulous. But I always say Beyonce has the Beyonce market covered.
Right.
You know what I mean? Be
right.
You. Find what your real thing is and where your real place is, and then come from that. Come from that form of expression. Because I believe that at the end of the day, that can't be denied, and it won't go out of style if you're real. If you're, you know what I mean? And, of course, some people get it. Some people won't. That's life. We got that.
Oh, it's
but you want to be you want to be able to keep your head up and go, and you want to be able to perform songs and tour and not dread, oh God, now I got to do this. You know, and it's usually
right.
The hit, the one that people don't want. You know, like, oh, I hate this song.
But, yeah.
You know, so just, you know, but it's called Black Velvet Mondays, and we got the Black Velvet paintings up, you know, like back in the day, and it's
that's hot.
It's really, really cool. It's really, really cool.
You know, I always tell everybody, I think I personally feel that everybody has their own personal music journey to go through.
Yes.
You know, some of them are going to be similar, but everybody's got different goals and different destinations. And the cool stuff is going through it all. You know, the journey itself is really the memorable points that you'll think back maybe 10 years from now. And to, you know, compare where you're at 10 years and just see the progression of where you're at. And now with the internet these days, I was like, man, there's no excuse why you can't make a name for yourself and display your talents. And like I said, it's not about the money. It's really remaining that student of music and receiving and taking pieces from here, learning from this person, and just adding it to your arsenal. I mean, that's where it's at, you know.
I agree. And I believe just whether you're a musician or a singer, just you live long enough, you just go through some more experiences, it comes out in your music. It comes out in the way you perform it, the way you sing it, the way you write it, the way you arrange it. It comes out in that. But in that, because it's a real life experience, you reach someone else through that. And that really, at the end of the day, for me, is what this is about. The entertainment factor is great, but it's so beyond that, you know, because that's what I think that we're here to do, and music is healing. That's what I think that we're placed on this earth. We're blessed to be musicians and artists, because you reach the masters in a whole other way. You know what I mean? And so, yeah, it's awesome. It's awesome. I'm blessed.
Totally. Well, Cheryl, it's been a true honor having you on my show. I would love to have you back and talk about your new albums, new tracks, anything that you got pending in the works. I got to have you back.
I would love to. I would love to. Thank you so much for having me on. I appreciate it.
Oh, you're welcome. And have a safe 2011.
Absolutely. You do the same.
All right. Thank you.
All right. Thanks.
Bye. Bye-bye. And a big shout out to Cheryl Pepsi Riley for coming on the show and chopping it up with me. Again, another great show from a seasoned veteran who's been out in the game for a long time, displaying her talents as a vocalist and now hitting the big screen, working with major icons such as Tyler Perry, and also releasing her own music to continue that musical journey that she started with. For more information on Cheryl Pepsi Riley, you need to check out her website at www.cherylpepsiriley.com. www.cherylpepsiriley.com. And for my past and current interviews, you can hit my website up at www.spudtootight.com. www.spudtootight.com. And I'm also available on iTunes as a podcast, so if you have a Mac or a PC, an iPhone or iPod or an iPad, open up the iTunes player, go to the iTunes store, type in the producer's corner, click on my image, and you'll have a list of my past and current interviews as well. And for the remainder of the show, I'm going to let the track that's playing in the background close out the show. And the title of the track is called Come Over, and it is by Cheryl Pepsi Riley. So I want to thank everybody for tuning and listening in. Until next time, you guys keep it tight. Peace.
Our connection is so right. I'm feeling you, and so the answer's yes to anything you say. 'Cause you got me feeling kind of sexy. Well, baby, I am ready for you. So won't you come over? I've been waiting for your call. Listening to Marvin Gaye, fantasizing about what you do. If I could just get you here, I know it would be very clear. Thinking of you keeps me in the mood. Ooh.
See you when you get here.